Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Now, do I have a Marcus on the line with me?
I hope so.
Yes, you do. We do.
Oh, good.
How's it going, Marcus?
It's going pretty well. How are you?
Yes, not bad at all. I mean, apart from, the week three blues, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. It's something to get used to.
Yeah. So you've got kids. So are they doing their online learning, or are they not old enough yet?
No, 2 and 3. So apparently they're glued to something on the TV right now.
Well, let's move straight into it then. The first story you've sent us is the sort of a look into, I suppose, the possibly dangerous process of a kind of trial and error way forward in order to end the COVID-19 lockdowns that we're in. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And sort of we're approaching the point, I think, where we have to consider, well, what happens next? And how do we not just get more cases and have to go back into lockdown again? So and a lot of countries around the world are obviously facing this. So virtually every country around the world has hit pause on their economies and on the lives of most of their citizens. And, for example, school closures in 188 countries have affected more than 1.5 billion students. I mean, it's sort of incredible. The world has just stopped. Mm. But we have to think about what is the exit strategy from this. And so the analogy is we got to the life raft, but we've got to get off the life raft. You know, this is the step back into some sort of regular society.
Yeah.
And so we've got to make sure that when we do that in New Zealand and countries around the world, that we suddenly don't get a spike in cases again, and we have to sort of scramble to sort of get on top of it. So there are a lot of ideas about how to do this. And the number that there's sort of a number, a statistical figure that epidemiologists are watching that sort of indicates whether the controls are working and how they can be relaxed. And this number is called the effective reproduction number, or it's given a symbol R, and that just denotes how many people the average infected person infects in turn. All right, so if you're infected, how many people are you on average going to infect, right? And that's just a number. If it's greater than one, then the outbreak is going to grow. So each person infects more than one person, and so it grows and grows and grows. If it's below one, it shrinks. All right, and so the goal of the lockdown is to push this number R as far below one as possible. So when the restrictions are loosened a little bit, then that R value doesn't rise above one. Because if it does rise above one, then we have to sort of increase the restrictions again and get a handle on it. Otherwise, those cases are going to grow and grow and grow.
So okay? That information, though, is very real time. You can't sort of know that until you relieve the lockdown. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's a very difficult thing to know. I mean, one of the main difficulties is that people who are infected maybe 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago don't actually exhibit symptoms for quite a while. Yeah. And so measuring this number, this quantity R in real time is actually really difficult. But there was some work done in the last 20 years or so that give scientists a way of estimating this value based on current data. So current trends, how things are moving, they can get a handle on this number. And so if the New Zealand government see this number and it's well below one, they might start, I guess, next Wednesday, maybe starting to sort of loosen up controls a little bit. Yeah.
Right.
But the question is how do they do that? And there are really three different ways that people can do this. Yeah. Hang on, I'm lost myself. Oh yeah, so there's looking through my notes. Obviously this quarantining, this restriction on society, isolating people, and tracing their contacts is a big sort of knob that the government can turn. There are border restrictions. That's another control. And there is this idea of social distancing, or enforcing social distancing, which is another control. And so there are some countries that have really used the first control, isolating people and tracking their contacts. And Singapore and Hong Kong and South Korea have tried to do this, and quite aggressively, and they've been able to control quite a lot of their cases that way, but it relies on a lot of testing. Now, the United States can, for instance,
you're right,
can increase the number of tests it does quite significantly, up to millions and millions. But even a country that big is not necessarily going to be able to get a handle on the number of cases it has. Yeah.
Yeah.
There is other technology, so mobile phone apps can help, and they can identify people who are ill or people who have had contact with other people who are sick. And certainly Google and Apple are trying to incorporate some sort of contact tracing into their operating system apps, into their apps. And some European countries, Germany and France, are looking at ways of implementing that based on European regulations.
Right.
But it's a difficult thing to do. So the second control is this border restrictions, and most countries have already got something like that already. And so New Zealand, obviously, and Australia have got some of the more restrictive restrictions. So we're now quarantining all returning citizens. And other countries are sort of looking into doing that as well. The last thing is trying to control social distancing.
Which is something that we're going to have to do kind of long term.
Which is something
right?
We're going to have to do. Yeah, exactly. So a country in Europe, Austria, has taken the lead on that. They've actually started opening some shops in the last day or two. And because they feel like then there's this number, this R number has decreased enough. And so they've started to sort of think about opening shops and other bigger stores in the next few days. But try and keep track of this number and make sure it doesn't start growing rapidly again, in which case everything will have to be shut down.
Mm.
But you see, there's a lot of pressure on countries to relax restrictions because there's obviously the big economic hit that most countries are feeling, and that's got to be balanced with the risk to society.
Mm. I guess the important thing to take from it, right, is that we are going to go into this phase where we are sort of unsure how it's going to work, which, I mean, here in New Zealand, the government is going to provide a bit more detail, I believe, this week on, for example, level 3. But, you know, we have to be responding to new data as it comes, right? So this is that trial and error process. You mean that we might have to go back and forth a little bit.
Right, exactly. It just relies on how this number changes. So the government's going to be looking at this infection rate infection rate per person very, very closely. And if that starts creeping up again, if it starts creeping up greater than one, then I guarantee the lockdowns are going to come back very, very quickly.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you for that explanation. That's good to sort of understand heading into that next part of the process, I suppose. Now, do you want to have a go explaining the nanostructured alloy lights?
Yeah, this is easy. Yes. So this is about silicon and the way it is. It's sort of a prodigious material for all electronics. But there's this word photonics. So electronics is all about moving electrons. Photonics is all about moving light. And silicon potentially could be really, really, really good at moving light and collecting light. And so, for example, most of the solar cells that you see solar cells on roofs, they are made of silicon. Mm-hmm. And silicon is used to absorb the light and then turn that into electricity and do good stuff, generate energy. But unfortunately, silicon is really, really... Excuse me a second. Both kids are crying.
There,
right
I know.
Now.
Do you want to go and give them a cuddle?
Can you just give me 30 seconds?
Yeah, of course. We can indeed. Talk soon, Marcus.
All right.
Okay, guys. What are we going to do? We're going to play the ads, and then we'll come back with some more Dear Science.
The Wire.
All right, we're back with Marcus Jones.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's all right. It's the life we're living at the moment.
And, it is, absolutely.
And our kids always need us. So do you want to just finish up the explanation around...
Yes, of course. Yeah, so silicon could be really useful at handling light. But unfortunately, silicon is really bad at absorbing light. So the reason for this, and there's a complicated scientific reason, but the analogy is changing gears. If you know anything about cars and gearboxes and anything like that, and clutches, if you've ever driven a manual transmission car, when you change gear, so you go from a lower gear to a higher gear, the clutch has to be rotating around, the plates have to be rotating at the same rate, okay? And then once that happens, they can connect and you change gear. Unfortunately, in silicon, just the way silicon is, the analogy to the rotating clutch plates or the moving of electrons in the silicon, they're all going in different directions. And so it's really difficult for light to change gear or be absorbed into the silicon. And this is called it's an indirect band gap semiconductor. And so when you make a solar cell, the cell has to be really, really thick because silicon just doesn't absorb very much light. So the thicker it is, the more light it'll absorb. But if you make a thick solar cell, it's not very efficient. It's right. And so there are other materials that are based on usually on compound rather than just on a pure material like silicon, and are much, much more expensive, but absorb light better. But are much more expensive. Now, silicon, we know how to handle silicon. We can make things out of silicon. Silicon is cheap. It's abundant. It's sort of the perfect material apart from this problem. So a lot of scientists have been trying for a long time to turn silicon into a material from a material that doesn't interact very strongly with light to a material that really, really does. And it looks like they've been able to make some progress with this. So what they've been able to do is make very small little nanoparticles, sort of rod-shaped nanoparticles of silicon that are alloys of silicon with another element, namely germanium, which is close to silicon in the periodic table. Okay. And this changes the structure of the silicon. It just modifies it enough so that now those sort of the analogous clutch plates are moving in the same direction at the same rate, and you can actually absorb light much, much better.
Brilliant.
And more than that is if you change the ratio of these two materials in the alloy, in these nanoparticles, it changes the color of the light that silicon interacts with the best. And so this is really potentially really, really useful because it means that we could make silicon or majority silicon materials that could be put into solar cells, which would work more efficiently. But then they could also be made into lasers, and they could be made into sensors and all sorts of devices where light and electronics come together. And this light detection sort of element in electronics has always been a barrier because the materials that we have to use for that are much more expensive and difficult to handle than silicon. If we could do everything out of silicon, it would make life an awful lot easier and make these devices potentially work better and work much more cheaply.
Very good news then.
Yes, well, hopefully.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you, Marcus. We should probably leave it there. I appreciate you giving us the time while you're obviously got your hands full at home.
And no worries.
Definitely a shout out to all the parents out there and everyone actually just kind of making do with their changed circumstances. Oh, you still there?
Okay. Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. All right. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Yes.
Thanks, Marcus.
Bye-bye.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.